Good morning, I'm Quentin Kayless, and I'm monitor from Parliamentary Monitoring Group. How did you come about to want to do this? In 2001, the department undertook a very extensive study of the system of setting standards between quality assurance and accreditation and metrology in the country. After completing that project, the department then proposed to cabinet that the whole system be restructured. And that was considered and approved in 2002. Following this, then the department came up with a policy to implement the restructuring, and that policy is known as modernizing the South African technical infrastructure. So the department approved this policy in 2004, and then some of the elements of the policy are that the acts that govern the bodies that are responsible in the area of standardization, accreditation and metrology be modified, amended and improved upon. So the two bills that we have before you are the last two that we are doing in implementing this policy. In 2006 and 2007, we had two other acts that were passed through the parliamentary process in implementing this policy. These two bills that we have before you today were considered by Cabinet last year in August. And then following that, we took them through the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee, where there was quite substantial improvements to the bills made through the committee itself and also through the public participation process. And now we are ready to bring them. Now, just to explain what the technical infrastructure is. The technical infrastructure is a system that sets standards and tests against the new standards, as well as accredits those people who do the testing to ensure that they are competent to perform technical measurements. So it's a system that wholly focuses on technical measurements that happen in the economy. It provides an objective basis for competitiveness, as quality, standards, and performance are inherent requirements to meet the customer needs in all the products and services that the economy offers. It is therefore critical to industry, and it is indeed critical for upgrading our industry, as it has been mentioned in our industrial policy, the Department of Industrial Policy, that the South African economy will do well if we upgrade all the various industry sectors that we have. We can also use the system to control imports of low quality so that we prevent these low quality products from undercutting our industrial base. The technical infrastructure system is also very useful for regulators, in that it provides them with the necessary standards that they can use to protect health and the safety of the public and also the environment. Moving on. So why do we need to make this change? As we know, globalization has placed quite a number of demands on us to guarantee that our products are safe and fit for purpose. So every economy in the world is having to do this, is having to look at their system and make sure that it can continue to support its needs. And then, as I said, in terms of industrial policy, we want to upgrade our economy, and we want most of our sectors to integrate into the global supply chain. And one of the key requirements to do so is that the companies must be accredited or certified to supply to various equipment, ordinary equipment manufacturers, and that requires a quality system for that to happen. We also want to make this change because we want to make sure that all the agencies that we have that operate in this regard are effective and are efficient in the work that they do. We want to make sure that they focus on the needs of the economy and that the standards that are generated and the requirements that are made are indeed protecting the public and protecting the environment. And we lastly want to make sure that all the mandates for the agencies are clear and directed. diagram form, this is the structure of the South African technical infrastructure. It's not different from that of our trading partners, what is important here is that we have three organizations or agencies that are government agencies that are critical for the functioning of the world system. We have Minister MMISA at the bottom. This agency is responsible for calibration, testing, and making sure that there is a system that is traceable to the international system of measurement. It is really the foundation of all measurements that takes place in the economy. Then we have the SAGS on the top. The SAGS is responsible for writing standards for products and systems. And these are the standards that are used in the industry. Then at the right corner we have SANA, which is the accreditation system. Its role is to make sure that the people that you testing, showing the strength of performance assessment, testing, inspection, and certification are actually competent to do that work. So this is then the whole system. What we find is that in the voluntary sector, as well as in the regulatory sector, this system is required. It's required because in the voluntary sector, for instance, to that the customer has, the supplier has to do this kind of work of testing, inspection, and certifying their product. In the regulatory sector, to meet the requirements of compulsory standards that are administered by regulation, the supplier has to make sure that the product has been tested, inspected, and conformed to those requirements. So without this system as a whole, it's very difficult to trade in any economy, and it's important. So therefore, it is a critical element for any economy to have a technical infrastructure. Now coming back to the two bills that are before you, one of the issues that arises, why do we need to, when we are separating a division of the SAGS, why do we need to have two separate organizations? The DTI has identified the need to consider the role of the SAGS, and this work was done some time back in 2001. In terms of the current mandate of the SAGS, the SAGS is responsible for promotion, development, and maintenance of infrastructure. That is, they are responsible for writing the national standards. They are also responsible for doing conformity assessment. That is, they test, inspect, and certify products. But in addition, the SAGS is responsible for administering technical regulations of compulsory standards. In that sense, they are the ones who look at the evidence that something complies with the compulsory standard. So if I just go back to the other slide, you'll see that what I essentially was saying is that the SAGS play in this conformity assessment field in the middle, and they play the right standards, and they are also a regulator at the same time. So this doing all this work for one body is not the normal practice worldwide. And as it turns out, it raises issues of conflict of interest. Because you write the standard, you check against the standard, and at the same time, you give people authority Although these things happen in their real time, they happen in their future. But this issue of conscious position still arises. So in that sense, there is therefore some sort of confusion between all the functions. Going forward, in benchmarking the South African regulatory system with other systems in the world, it became clear that the current practice of the Revenue Standards Board as a regulator is not as advantageous. Its impact on the efficiency and effectiveness of the regulator and the quality of the technical regulation that the regulator needs to have. It also divides the attention of the Standards Board. We should really maintain and drive standards as well as provide this conformity assessment. The function of being the regulator is additional to this work. The benchmarking, however, confirms the importance of the need to align the three key legs of the development system. The key legs are the standard measurement and assessment. This is the system that government provides, so it's really the environment that government facilitates for economic activity. So it's important that this system remains aligned and working together and has direction. We benchmark against countries such as Brazil and Malaysia and also developed countries. Okay, now coming to the two bills. Starting with the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification Bill. The National Regulator for Compulsory Certification Bill will establish the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification, which will be responsible for the administration of compulsory certifications. These compulsory certifications, they are also known as particular regulations. They cover areas such as the automotive area, electrotechnical area, mechanical, health related area, building and construction material, food and associated, as well as the environmental protection. So you can see that the compulsory certifications, which are compulsory standards, are found throughout the various sectors of the economy. One example of the compulsory certification is the proposed compulsory standard that is being developed and is relevant for energy efficient light bulbs. The aim of this regulation is to ensure that the energy efficient light bulbs available to consumers will be safe and they will meet the criteria in terms of minimum output and how long they last. Members may know that the light bulbs that we buy currently are said to be inefficient and therefore not helping with any challenge that we have currently. And government is looking at coming up with energy efficient lighting throughout the whole building sector. So we have to make sure that those energy efficient lights that we are going to get, so it seems mostly they will be imported. We have to make sure that they are going to be safe for use. So this bill will transfer the administrative elements that are relevant to compulsory certification from the current national standard that governs the FABS to this national regulator for compulsory certification. Now if we look at the bill for the standard body, the standard bill, the new bill provides for the continuation of South African Bureau of Standards. The mandate will cover the development of voluntary standards and maintenance and provision of quality So all the standards that they write are abolitionist. They only become compulsory once government says they should become so by publishing the publication. So they will no longer deal with compulsory standards. They will write all that standards. And then if government feels they must be compulsory, that government will be so. But then after that, the national regulator compulsory. There are currently about 6,000 South African national standards that cover a whole range of sectors in the economy. The standards, you find standards in chemical and mining, standards in electricity, communication, food and health standards, standards for materials such as sourcing, textiles, aircraft, and the standards for the transportation industry, including for vehicles, buses, lifting equipment, and a whole range of other transportation needs. Now, coming back to the yours directly, the mandate of the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification promotes public safety and consumer protection. Through the enforcement of other minimum standards for safety and maintenance products. The object of the National Regulation for Compulsory are to develop recommendations to the Minister with regard to compulsory certification, administer and maintain compulsory certification, carry out market surveillance through inspections in order to monitor compliance, and enforce compliance. So once there is a compulsory standard, they will make sure that all the products that come onto the market comply, and then all the products that are on the market will be checked on a regular basis to see if they keep compliant. If they don't, then they apply some sort of test that are appropriate. Being an independent body means that the national regulator for compulsory certification will have its own board, and that board will have 7 to 9 members. And the chief executive of the organization will also sit on the board. The rest of the members will be 9 executive members, and they will be appointed by the Minister of Trade and Industry. When the board is appointed, the Minister of Trade and Industry will ensure that the board is broadly representative of the democracy of the country, and that the board as a whole has sufficient knowledge, experience, or qualifications relating to the functions of the national regulator for compulsory certification, as well as the responsibility of the board in the matter. The Minister must designate a member of the board, so the Minister will be. One of the functions of the board will be to establish an advisory forum where in a balance of interest consisting of representatives of organizations who have an interest in the method of compulsory regulation can meet and discuss issues. The forum must advise the board on methods in respect of international regulation for their role, and will also advise on any other matter on which the board requests advice. So the board can ask the forum for general advice if they want to. But this is going to be advice, so it's not going to be what the forum has an agree on and thinks it would be in the good of the country for the agency to do. That does not necessarily mean that the board will implement. The board will have to apply its mind for its case that has been considered as a constitutional practice. The board will establish a constitution if necessary for this forum. How is the regulator going to define it? will later talk about that specifically with the finance through money appropriated by Parliament and fees that complied by the Minister of Trade and Industry after consulting with the Minister of Finance. Currently, the division of the FATF that deals with this issue of compulsory regulation, compulsory standards, is financed by money from Parliament, appropriated by Parliament, as well as fees that are charged for inspecting and making sure that products comply with our demand. Allowing that product that complies in the trade market. So the sector there given or set fees that those specific sectors take to make sure that this inspection service and the compliance service is put in place. So the regulators have to pay so that these regulations are actually effective and they protect their market. It is estimated that 80% of the national regulators' compulsory expenses will be financed from the medium-term expenditure framework transfer payment, and 82% will be financed from the The estimated turnover for the national regulators' compulsory expenses for 2008-2009 is $144 million, and for the following year, 2009-2010, is $157 million, and after that, 5 years from now, 10, 11, that will be about 130. The structure of this agency will be can be within the agency can be represented in the following diagram. So we have the CEO and various divisions and support services. We have support services such as legal, finance, and then the core activities will be the responsibility of the operations management. In addition, the way that the national regulator would function is that it will have a board. And then we have the CEO. Currently, the current executive responsible to the AFA, this area will act when it becomes a statutory body until the board is created. The areas that are covered, electrochemical, automotive, chemical, etc., will remain or be expanded depending on the need of the economy. Then there will be the advisory forum that can advise the board. And then the board will meet with the DCR on a quarterly basis, as it's done with other agencies. The National Regulator for Compulsory Certification will have to remain linked to the whole system of the technical infrastructure, because that's quite critical. They will still derive their compulsory standards from the standards that are generated by the APPN. In addition, on the international front, they will be linked or work with the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe, Working Party 29. This is the Working Party or committee that deals with issues of the automotive sector. But the safety of the product there is dealt with under the Security Party. They will also work with the International Organization for Legal Metrology, as well as the Codex, which is the body that deals with food safety standards. And of course, as we have shown in the organogram, they have to be linked to our pillar training, so they will have somebody with the eyes that is doing it, so they have a permanent scope of their job. Now, in the transition all the employees of the SSDS that are employed in the regulatory department currently. And that those that provide administrative support to the regulator division are to transfer to the national regulator to control that system. This transfer will happen with due regard to section 197 of the labor regulation. That says that when such transfer happens, the conditions of employment of the employees should not be made worse. Okay, now changing to the other act, the other bill, which is the standard bill. After taking out the division, the regulatory division, this bill then considers how is the SABS going to work going forward after the division. So the broad mandate of the SABS supports trade in industrial development by ensuring that South African standard legislation continues to support the needs of industry. The SABS also supports regulators responsible for protecting public health and safety, as well as the environment, so they will continue to provide standards for industry and they will continue to provide standards for industry. Some of the objects of the SABS develop, promote, and maintain South African national standards. They promote quality and connection with commodities, products, and services. And they also render conformity assessments and any measures connected to them. Now, the board of the SABS is also going to change from the current 7 to a range of 79. The members of the board will be non-executive members and the chief executive of the SABS. The non-executive members will be appointed by the Minister of Education. When the Minister appoints the board of the SABS, the Minister will ensure that the board is broadly representative of the public, the population of the public, and that the board has sufficient knowledge, experience, and qualifications relating to the functions of the SABS and the responsibilities of the board, including in particular business management, finance, marketing, international and foreign sustainability, and short-term finance. Because the SABS will be, the SABS is a 3D agent, which means that it has some commercial income. So it's important to have commercial knowledge at the board. The minister will also appoint the chairman of the board, or nominate the chairman of the board. Some of the functions of the board will include setting up an advisory forum. The board must submit an advisory forum with a balanced interest, consisting of representatives of the organizing resolution method of the Standards Act. The forum will advise the board on matters in respect of the development of their role, and the board may establish a constitution for this forum. In addition to the forum, which is for all interested parties in the industry, the board will also establish a forum that will be called the Government Consultative Forum. This forum will advise the SABS on measures which the SABS will play a role in, and any other measures that the board may need to advise on. This is just to make sure that the government department that has a need for standards that maybe they want to use in regulation have a forum where they can raise these issues and make sure that they come into the business plan.
Thank you very much, Chuberetta. Now I know I've seen the name of Chuberetta. Members, the presentation has been put before us. Now it's our turn. I see Honorable Dalton, I mean Mr. Douglas, I see Honorable Nkumu. Honorable Gamede, Honorable Tembe, and Honorable Temba, you are welcome. Although we have already introduced ourselves, I think we can get a bit of your introduction before we continue.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Christina Tembe, the President of the Human Language in the National Council of Policy. We expect that for the next program, and we are attending the launch of the women. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to the Honorable Chairperson and everybody here. As our Honorable Temba said, we are from there, and I also apologize, but I want to say my warm words from our local star. And then my name is Lillian Temba. I represent the Northern Cape in this conversation. Thank you.
Tumpen sama juga, waktu itu nanti.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Let's start. We start with Honorable Douglas. We come to Honorable Comera.
My question is around the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification Board. I specifically want to just focus quickly on the advisory board. In the poll, it basically says the board must establish an advisory forum with a balance of interests. My concern is, will this advisory forum have any form of teeth, as a person would say? Would they, if there's standards being set, or if there's compulsory specifications are laid down, and how does industry and people that get affected by it have a say about whether the specifications being put down is actually going to adversely affect that particular industry or not? You gave a small example of light bulbs, but let's say we do decide that we want to import enough light bulbs, but it means that our local industry is going to lose jobs. My question is this: these people within the industry can have a platform that has some teeth built into it that will make sure that the specifications that are laid down is not going to have a very adverse effect upon our economy or upon our different industries. And if so, how does that get encapsulated in the book?
Thank you, Chen. I think I've got two questions. The first one is on the SAPS. Said here, it is stated that the board actually should draft a constitution or rule for the forum. Then my question is that, why can't it be stated clearly in the bill itself, so that it must be clear to the forum, and then tomorrow it doesn't become a personal issue or something that will oppress the forum. The second feature, I just want to ask the chief director to convince me is that the NRCS, when it says that the minister is going to appoint the chairperson, why not the committee itself? Thank you.
Thanks. The first comment is on the presentation itself. To me, even the presentation is technical, because these things, many of us who don't know, let alone those that are supposed to be even appointed to the board and so on. So the question would be, there's a proviso there that even the board or the forum needs to be fully representative. Now, based on that, how are we going to achieve that? Trying to be fully representative and between these 9 and 7 and 9 people, looking at the technical nature of both of them. Secondly, on the first bill in RCS, I see the organogram is very thick as opposed to being flat. Is that maybe just a presentation or is the actual organogram is going to look like that? So I'll leave that as a question covered.
I'll extend the question just on another one. If you can be really clarified that members, when appointing the members of the board, the minister must ensure that the board is broadly represented of the population of the republic. If maybe you can elaborate more, because it can be broadly represented, but we're looking at the issue of gender, looking at the issue of people with disabilities. It may be in the presentation something that really explains that those must be taken into consideration when appointing the board. I think we should start in our policies indicate that we really understand that gender issues must be taken into consideration. And maybe if you can explain, because maybe you did when we were not here, but if there's a true evaluation between the two girls. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. No, I didn't know. So what I wanted to find out is the two things that are before. How are they comparable? And how do they compete with other international brands? Are we at the par with other international brands? And where do they actually derive their authority from? Are we talking in relation to intellectual property? Well, I'm trying to establish a situation whereby we might find that the products of a thing may not be subjected to our standards. Well, their standards might supersede our standards. I'm not sure. I just need to carry it around there because it's a bit technical for me. I mean, you may have heard about instances whereby there are files around government pick and pay, package the moves and send them. We don't know exactly what the situation is there. Of course, we've heard about the corner of the world. We just want to understand more. Do these bills have teeth in terms of the coverage and the problems that we experience in the kind of space?
Honourable Chairman, the question will be the last.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to know what are the concerns raised by Cabinet and the Portfolio Committee? Because the briefing says that these concerns are taken into account. So what are their concerns? The other question is in relation to health, environment, and safety. The regulators that they got there presently in relation to this law, do they have any concerns? If any, what are these concerns from them? And then the Minister of Trade and Industry is going to be the minister here, am I right? So why has standards been taken away from the Minister of Education? Because previously it was like that. If we can just have an elaboration on that, we can have clear, please. And then it says that these two bodies are divided now, standards and regulatory. It says that it is not optimal advantage. I take it for granted that by the division of these two bodies, it's going to better the standard. You can just ask, I mean, I think I'm a correction, so I'd like the department to explain why they say it's going to be better and why it's not. If it's not divided, why? How is it disadvantaged? My last question, Honourable Chairperson, is the time frame for bodies to consult on this bill. What is the time frame? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members. I mean, this is my head. Chief Director, when you started, you indicated to us that quality measurement and performance are among the factors which we have to look at them more seriously and in a specific sense, and that is why these two entities are being separated. Now, I want to go back to that a little bit of a thorny issue. Our cheese was banned from Europe at some stage. Now, in terms of these qualities as we mentioned, what it is that went wrong with that cheese? Is it because it was of low quality, or at the production level, the performance was, I don't know, substandard, or what it is that went wrong? You may not necessarily give the specifics in terms of the art, but if you can indicate the area to me. And I take it from the point that before we agreed to send our cheese to Europe, they must have told us what kind of cheese they want. Their own, their own standard, whatever. Does it then suggest that we fail to meet them? And if so, another question goes to be asked. Does it suggest that the department does not have specific monitoring mechanism until they themselves, that side, became aware that our cheese was not the type we wanted? That's the first question. Secondly, you indicated that the NRCF, the National Regulator for Compulsory Services, will be funded for both of them, will be funded in part by the money approved by Parliament and on the other by the fee. Now, we were going to say, at the level of the SABS, the fees will accrue from the charges for, say, setting and issuing national standards. But then what about the NRCF? Where will they get you also indicated that the DTI is the one that will allocate the budget to both the NRCS and the SARS. Now, by virtue of implementation, which might be, I may be wrong, does it also suggest that if these go ahead, we might have the DTI to come to the last one. How will these NRCSN link up with the province? Because I know one thing from that in my province we are very productive in terms of oranges, and we have such a day. We don't need to take all our oranges to go to a day like Italy, where we make fruit juice like Minute Maid. In that context, I know that perhaps they will begin to know that for me to be able to export my fruit to Belgium, I just give an example, these, that and the other qualities or factors of qualities and so on must be met. But do we have a way in which all those can be checked and be certified there in the factory after production before they go to Belgium and the Belgian says, no, this juice of yours is not to our standard?
Thank you very much for those questions. What I'll do, I'll answer some, and then my colleagues will come and ask the other questions. Now, starting with the first one on the advisory forum, the question is whether the advisory forum are going to. And if so, why is it not captured in the bill? The basic idea of the advisory forum is to allow all the experts a place and a forum where they can discuss issues that affect either the regulator or the standard setting fee. We are doing this because we realize that on the board level, there may be limited technical knowledge of this issue. So we wanted to expand the space for this technical knowledge exchange to happen. So the idea is that the forum, they will make suggestions But on the whole, the suggestions they will be making are going to be across the whole technical infrastructure system. You cannot have one without the other, the suggestion. So, because they will be practitioners in the field, they will know what is required from, say, the SABS to make the whole system work nicely together. So that's how they will do this. They will have teams in the sense that what their meetings are going to be recorded. The recommendations they make to the SABS are going to be recorded. And where the agency fail to implement something that is necessary, then when the agency runs into trouble, then we'll be able to say, but why didn't you take this into account when you have been forewarned and so forth. So yeah, but otherwise they are not. The advice they give is not, the board must not just implement without thinking. And then still staying on the advisory forum, one of the questions was we are saying in the presentation that the board may draft the constitution and draft rules for the forum. Yeah, this isn't the case where the forum feels there's too much work for them, or they don't want to spend a lot of time drafting how they should organize the meetings, how often they should meet, how should they record their issues. And the board then may assist them by asking the SABS or the regulator to give them secretarial support to do this for them and give it to them to consider and modify. I think that's the idea. But we feel it's operational enough to leave out of the head. In terms of the board, the minister will nominate the chairperson of the board. And the question is, why should the board nominate the chairperson? I think I'll leave this one to one of my colleagues to answer. And then the board, there will be representatives of the population of the public. We are talking about 7 to 9 members. We have indicated what we have in mind in terms of representation. Race is an issue to consider, gender, disability is an issue to consider. But I think what should be borne in mind is that in appointing board, the minister asks people to nominate by advertising the newspaper. And then members of the population then nominate people they know that they have the kind of leadership skills to sit on this board. So in that sense, the minister is somewhat committed to working with what has been put forward. But the intention is that we try as far as possible to be represented. When it comes to gender, I think in the other agencies that we have, we seem to be making very good progress. And the relation between the two bills, I don't know, I remember it's not here, but the issue is that we are taking out a division that is currently part of the current agencies. Now, when we take out this division and make it standalone, we must make sure that what remains continues and the new division continues. That's really the relationship. But these two bodies deal with issues of technical infrastructure systems. So they will continue to work together, just as they are going to be independent. They will sit together now as equal partners, whereas before one report to the other. There was a question from Member Connor about the comparability of our standards to international standards. As I've indicated in the presentation, we are members of the International Standards Organization. So we take part in developing international standards. and I think maybe I should ask my colleague from the SABS to actually just expand on that one. There were concerns that were raised in the portfolio committee and concerns from cabinet that honorable members mentioned. Starting with the portfolio committee question, the concerns that were raised there were one, the board size. Members of the portfolio committee felt that the board that we were proposing were too big. We were proposing 10 to 15 members, and members felt that 10 to 15 members are too big, 7 to 9 is better. So we have taken that into consideration and committee now to 7 to 9. There were issues about in the national regulator for consultants. We had indicated that in the cases where there's no national standard, and that a national standard is not going to be made soon, the minister can declare something, some other standard compulsor, and members felt that that was too onerous on everybody else, that if there is no national standard, then we must set up what has to happen first before the minister decides on a standard for the school. Because there are cases where when you want to come up with a standard that you want to use as a compulsory standard, industry or somebody within the technical committee can block the process so that you don't reach consensus. Therefore, you don't have a standard, and it's hard for you to regulate that area. In those cases where somebody can frustrate the process intentionally, we feel that the minister must be able to go ahead and prioritize that that area and declare the compulsory standards. Because compulsory standards have to do with safety, health, and environmental well-being. So they are not to be taken lightly. So you cannot just allow somebody to cross. Yeah. So those are some of the issues that they maybe my colleagues can also add on some of the concerns. The time frame to consult. We consulted all the government departments, including provincial and local government. We consulted with industry. This has been a long process. So industry has been consulted extensively. By the time we came to down here to Parliament, we had already done all the consultations with the outside stakeholders and within government. And when the bills were here in the portfolio committee, then also people had the opportunity to make public comments. Now, the time frame going forward from the NCOP really depends on the NCOP, what more they still need to consider. Not really a time frame, no. Yeah, no, no, no. It's not an art anymore. Making this the new bill, will this make for better standards for South Africa? Yes. And the reason is that currently the SABS they set the standards, so they write the standards. After they write the standards, they also do the testing against those standards. But for products that have to comply with compulsory standards, you actually need a letter of authority to sell that product. And that letter of authority comes from the SAP. So now they will test, and then you must give them evidence that look, my product complies. But they wrote the standard, they tested, and now they're going to give you authority. So you see, there's an impression of conflict of interest. Although these things happen in various divisions, not one person doing it, but it's not as easy to say to the magistrate, say, look, this is three cents. So because of that, if you want to start up, to set up a testing or inspection facility, and you have small players, the first thing you do, you check who does this, and you find that the executive does this work. Then you will say, I'm small. I don't have all these resources. There's no way I'm going to compete with the executive. So in that sense, you discourage other people entering this market. There are some kind of work that could be done by somebody with a very small facility, but they won't be able to set up most of it because they are worried about that they are going to compete with a giant. Whereas if you separate this function, especially the regulator function, then it makes it easier for people to say, look, if I'm competent, the regulator might just give me some work. I'm going to have to go and inspect the retail shop for light bulbs or for batteries for the regulator because this is easy to do. And then you can do that work. And then the regulator can actually do the work. That's one of the ways why this would be better. Standards for education. The standards that the SABS uses are for products and for systems. They are not education standards. For that we have the SAQWA. Yes, so we have this, they deal with the other standards. The case of cheese being bought from Europe. this happens now and then, that some of our products, when they get to different countries, they get to China because what the testing that was supposed to be done has not been done. So, and this is the problem. One of the, in the whole technical infrastructure field, one of the important things is that the people who do the testing must be audited and be found to be competent to do that work. So hence we have this accreditation system that does that, that checks them. So sometimes to save costs, people may not use accredited facilities to do the necessary testing, and then it's very difficult to sell products in markets abroad because they will ask, who did the test? And then when you mention the laboratory that did the test, they say, but this laboratory doesn't have accreditation, so we don't trust. Although they may be very well, very competent, they will not trust them because they don't have an accreditation. So it is a problem. However, sometimes the products are not tested because we want to move products into the test. We had a case of pineapple, canned pineapple, that what has happened is that somebody bought a product that was not supposed to be used as fertilizer and used it as fertilizer. And it turns out to contain too much, heavy metal. And then when it was sold in Europe, when the test was done, they found that the product contained cadmium at levels that are higher than they expected. So then they had to come back. That just goes to point that this system is really very critical for the whole system is very critical for the economy. This is for the national regulator. This for both bodies are not cheap. The budget depends heavily on government for both bodies. As I've indicated, government really provides the environment for which the other activities get tested. Government provides the environment by making sure we have the SMPS, we have the National Metrology Institute, we have SANA, and this regulator. So that's going to continue. In the case of any of these bodies going under, I'm not sure what the government is going to do, but they are not supposed to go under because they are not there to make a killing. You know, they're not there to make a profit. They are there to serve the needs of the public. Linking up with provinces, the SABS has some offices in various provinces. I think they can answer that one. Can can I ask my colleagues to come in? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and honourable members. I think one of the key questions that was asked was how will the separation improve the situation? I think many of you know that the SABS has been around for a number of years and has been doing a job, I believe quite a good job, but has been doing a job in terms of developing national standards, testing to those national standards and regulating certain instances. I believe that the separation will improve the situation because we clarify that national standards are indeed a national asset and are developed to meet national needs. So, for instance, there isn't an exclusivity in terms of the regulator that's currently housed within the SABS, but any regulator at any level may use a national standard. So, for example, if a local authority wishes to specify a product, can at this stage, but it will be made more clear by separating the bills, that they may use a national standard to specify in their local legislation the use of the compliance requirements to those standards. So the separation will make that more clear. It will also make more clear that anybody can test those products and claim that they comply to the requirements of those standards. It's not just the SABS, and it's not just the SABS regulator. And separating the regulator allows for that separation. I think Dr. Damana did cover the issue that education standards are not covered in this, and we will not expect that. So education standards existed on their own, unit standards, and changing of the bill will not change those things. I think the issue of compliance as well, the issue of cheese, I think, again, that was quite well covered. But one of the key elements about getting our product aligned or accepted in international markets revolves around making sure that our standards are aligned with international standards where applicable and where appropriate. To that end, the SABS has been aligning our standards with international standards. Of those 6,000 standards that were mentioned, about 50% are currently direct adoptions of international standards, and the percentage is increasing year by year as we align more and more closely with international markets. It's also important that was mentioned was the fact that it's not just about whether or not our standards are aligned, but whether or not we can demonstrate that our product meets the requirements of the international authorities, and whether or not our testing is our test certificates are acceptable to those international authorities. And for that reason, the separation and the management of the technical infrastructure is very important and part of the intention of separating these stores. So I think that's a very important aspect as well. I think the issue of the funding of the SABS was also asked and how that takes place. Currently, the SABS proper makes income from the sale of standards. It's not a significant amount, but we do make some money from the sale of standards. We do make money out of charging for our testing and certification services. And the regulator, I won't speak on their behalf, but also make money out of the levy income that's derived from that. So how are our standards, finally, how our standards link with the provinces? Yes, we do have various regional offices in the provinces to do conformity assessment activities, some testing, some certification in the provinces, but also the fact that our standards can be used at various levels of government, not just as by a single regulator, but by various, even down to the specified down to the contract level. Anybody can call up a standard in a person-to-person contract. So at all levels of law and of regulation.
There was a lot of discussion around this issue, and DPSA and
article on corporate governance in the public sector
recommends that the minister do that for them. And I think it's because the chairperson, it's quite an important position in the world. So that's worth, that is why we have it like that. Then the one issue that the portfolio committee have commented on and which is now provided for in the standard bill is section 28, which is a new section, and this section deals with the use of standards in law. And it talks to all the issues that we said where it's not just the DTI that we use through the national regulator to compel these investigations, but the Department of Health, Mineral and Energy, Water Affairs, a lot of these departments use standards as the base for which people require them. I think there was a question on the duty of the tax regulator for compulsory investigation, but I think if we could ask the regulator maybe to just address that issue. We have done substantial, there's some things that I think we could probably tell me more in detail where and how.
Thank you, Chef. On the issue of the chief, I think when we look at the impact, it has strengthened the chief compared to the previous, to the current standard fee. And I will just, you know, by start evaluating on a daily basis some of the principles are in, on a daily basis some of the principles are in the fee, what happens. If in the course of our inspection, we come across products that we suspect that do not comply or conform with the legislation, an opportunity is given to the manufacturer or the importer to prove to us that they do comply. And the failure to do so, we will then issue what we call the CEO directive, where those products will have to be kept in the possession of the importer or manufacturer or retailer until such time that they have proved to us that they have, you know, corrected those products to comply with the relevant legislation. If during the course of them, you know, of the production, they have failed to then prove, we then move ahead and currently request the Minister of Trade and Industry to issue an order for those products to be destroyed or to be returned to their country of origin. Under the new legislation itself, the board will do so. You know, they will give a directive that those products should be destroyed. But it is also a criminal function as well, for one, to sell products which do not comply with the law. There's also provision within the legislation as well that we can name and shame. And I think during the previous weeks, we have seen a lot of distractions of products on the media. We have also, you know, we're not hesitant as well to name and shame. And some individuals also were arrested within the South African Bureau of Standards, you know, for failure to give the required information by the regulator, you know, in performing his work. So there are very drastic measures which are provided by the bill to ensure that there is full compliance to the legislation. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. There is some follow-up questions or some further issues for you. I see Honourable Chairman, I see Honourable Mugutu. Please, I will get you to your statement for the community. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. You can, Chair, you have the right to overrule my question. I don't know if I focus to the relevant point in the lab, but I'm concerned about when related to standards. On article on standards, it was speaking about the teacher, they are injected with water. So when they freeze it, it becomes sticky. When you cook it, it disappears, it becomes more sticky. And this is what we experience every day. So the chairperson of the consumer forum,
out on public.
So,
around this advisory forum. This advisory forum, are they going to be reunited? If yes, how? Is it going to be persisting, or is going, are they going to get an allowance of monthly salary? And how will they be appointed or elected?
Any other follow-up?
There's one issue, I'm sure you all know that is only track of this issue. Under section 18, it talks about compulsory certification. And on the first sentence, then not compulsory, it's made. But then if you go further on the subsection, the minister man. So it's a may at the first, it's not compulsory at the first line, then maybe it's a may. The same thing when it goes to section, section 36, it talks about the may. But specifically on this compulsory specification, then it means that it's also this thing, because it's under a heading of compulsory specification. The minister then is given a discretion, whereas on the other hand, must consult the minister concerned. How do you conduct it?
Thank you, Mama. Let me also have some few things to say. You see, why am I worried much about these things, these cheese, this mixed, now the white apples? You know, sorry for that. You know, when you have some time, I was one time I was seated behind two passengers. One of them was from Germany. So they were talking in English, although in some cases they used the way to come back to Africa. But one thing specific, he said, the other one from my left, he said he finds it very interesting to fly at AA because, according to him, there is no other plane everybody which has enough room, leg room, he said, in the business class. Yes, he said, even his own Lufthansa did not have that. I felt very great. When we alighted, I went to him. I said, very good, can't you write an article in the newspaper? So when we came back from Madagascar, there were two white ladies. I think they were from England, I don't know. They were saying they find it very pleasurable to eat South African chocolate. Because if it's not too creamy, neither is it too sugary or too sweet. I feel very well. That's why now when the thing of cheese and all comes, oh, I don't feel okay. Secondly, in line with what Honorable was saying, I think there was a time, I don't know whether it was towards the end of 2006 or the beginning of 2007, there were some game farmers who were accused of having candy. I don't know, lion meat or meat of the lion, I don't know. Now, my question is, the fact that the meat was canned, definitely there was some form of factory involvement. That's the first thing. And then secondly, I don't mind much about the standard whatever, that I'm not, but the question of that having been done, and the thought that went out without it being mentioned, that it was lion meat. How do we find ourselves in such a situation as a country? Because somehow, some way, some intervention, that's the correct word, not intervention, some intervention perhaps we have brought about. Secondly, you know, I used to like this fish called genry. It was very popular in the Royal Caribbean. It was if you haven't eaten genry, there was no reason to stop the you know that the thing like this, that's what the base and the there on top, it used to be, I don't know whether it was printed or it was engraved, it used to indicate the date of expired on the thin act of heat. Now today, it is just written by ink stepped. Now how can I know whether it could have been dubbed or whatever, whatever, and there's no. So in such situations, how does this play BS? see it as something that can represent what it is. Because it may very well inspire the rabbi, you know, and the chef, and you and so on. We may not know, just go there to buy it. Thank you, sir. Over to you.
Thank you, honorable members. Can we answer this in a different format? Maybe we start with the chicken chefs helping us there with the chicken standards, and then remuneration of the advisory forum. Ministerium can come in. And then this one of compiler specifications on section 13. I don't know if Johan can set up this there. And then the last one on product, good product, like boxes in SAA. And then, I think it will go back to that again.
Thank you, Chef Hassan. The issue of the chicken, exactly for the cover under another law, which is called freedom policy. We deal with weight and measure. Now, I think as you have heard from that consumer, activist, he obviously was informed by us, because occasionally we do, inform them of what is happening in the marketplace, that we have come across chicken, it's not only the chicken, prompts as well, laced with water, so that the weight, you're buying 1 kilo, whereas you are buying 700 or 900, and it's not an average kilo. And so there are monitoring activities on a daily basis to make sure that. And I think you will remember that recently we did one on bread, and there was a lot of publicity around the SNPN and bread, and it was under legal methodology. So also there was an empowering legislation to solve that kind of practice. I just wanted also to just say, talking about, lion meat and issues around fiery and all that, just, to create a little bit of a framework so that we have a common understanding. First of all, there are standards that some of these are voluntary, and people can comply to those on a compulsory basis. There are those which are mandatory or compulsory under the law, various legislations, which make them not law. But this product must meet the following requirements. And there are those which are mandatory through compulsory specifications. Under D, because being under section 15, which Johan later will talk about. And compulsory specifications on food are only at the moment on fishery products and can't be only those two compulsory specifications. We hope to grow that area. But there are other regulators other than SAPS, regulators that regulate these products which have to comply with that. And perhaps I believe that those will be best suited to respond to these questions, why we don't know compliance and all that, to those issues. But I must indicate also that we do, additional to that also, we do have conformity assessment within the SAPS commercial activity. That's when you are saying that standard is not compulsory, but that will make it compulsory through an agreement. You enter into an agreement with SAPS to say if you have these and certify these products, and there are conditions related to that. And the SAPS may allow you to do the SAPS mark. If you use the SAPS mark, then you must be able to sell those products, within the claim or within the permit that they were allocated to. SAPS can allocate the permit to say this is white paper and then half of it or 75 of it is white and the other one is yellow, it's not white. And there are redress mechanisms by failure to do that. So Department of Health and Agriculture have regulators which deal with some of these products that you are talking about, going overseas, and then periodically we do obviously through the codex. I think you did see the codex internationally. We set those standards. We do monitor what is happening, and what products are condemned by other regulators overseas.
But they are condensed by other regulator policies. The data is close of what Dr. Chang indicated, but they have failed to meet the relevant compulsory specification. You know, that if a product must be X, it must be X. It can't be less than X or more than X. In fact, it can be more than, it can be better than X, but not less than X. If it's less than X, it will be condemned. And I must indicate that it is not only those countries, but in South Africa as well, there are products that we review from other countries to gain entry into South Africa because of the similar product. So it is just a two-way to make sure. And one other thing that is important here is that when you look at the deal and some of those regulations, you know, the principles of safety, health, and environmental control, which I call them the three pillars, you know, of this legislation, that if issues are not healthy, or the impact on our environment, or they are not safe for South Africa, and they have been declared as compulsory, or they are within the law, they should not be allowed entry into the South African market, neither will they be allowed also to go out of the South African market. Because also we do not want products from South Africa to go to other countries, and so that South Africa is viewed as a dumping, you know, the dumping department with country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other thing? Oh.
On the issue of remuneration, the question around remuneration of the advisory board, the rule does not provide for remuneration. So the participation is voluntary. The establishment of the committee of the board is not voluntary. But the participation is voluntary. And what, from our experience, for example, with the there's an accreditation board that was established in terms of the accreditation act that you have seen last year. People and associations, industry workers to organize work organizations, organize business, and civil society come and participate. They don't get an opportunity to really talk to the boards, and the boards got a business to it. So the cost element is the cost of the venue, the cost of giving these people some attrition.
Yeah,
so
that
is the process we want to take
this forward
at the moment.
Thank you very much. Anything else? Oh, you said you were better. Thank you. Thank you. The word may and might, when I hear them, they ring serious cards bell. If it's interesting, maybe just for the sake of interest, I call it the past. You wouldn't have found any kind of such provision in the rules of Parliament. Parliament would never have told a minister in imperative sort of terms that he or she in a particular instance must go and do something. It was simply uncalled for. Needless to say that times have changed for better. And nowadays we find various provisions in the laws of Parliament where Parliament is the sovereign maker of law would simply tell a minister in such terms that even a particular instance he or she must do something. So even now and then, as of late, we find these kind of provisions. If we have a look at page, I can very briefly refer here to page 7 of the compulsory specification of page 7, there we have in clause 13, sub 1, the minister may. Lower down in sub clause 2, it's there in 938, we have a notice under subsection so and so, must contain. Just lower down in sub 3, the minister may. Just lower down in sub 4, the minister may not. Just lower down in 5, the minister must. So we have a variation of the use of may and must, and even the may not dispersed in there. The problem that would arise if we have the following formulation in clause 13 sub
1, where it says that the minister may, is this. If we read further, we will see that it says the minister may on the recommendation of the board. So, by implication, it tells us that the minister may not do anything without the recommendation of the board. If the word may would be substituted with must, it would then mean that the minister must, on the recommendation of the board, declare a South African national standard to be elevated to the echelon of compulsory certification. That would mean that the ministerial discretion would be taken away altogether. The minister would then be in a position, if there is a recommendation by the board for a standard to be declared a compulsory certification, there would be no discretion on the part of the minister, and the minister would be obliged to declare that standard a national certification. Unless my colleagues can assist me, I think that would be the motivation for suggesting with respect that the word may should be dictated to allow that ministerial discretion based on the recommendation. Needless to say, that if there is a recommendation on the part of the board for a fair to be declared compulsory, there would be a huge onus on the minister to exercise his or her mind in favour of declaring a compulsory decision. I hope I've been fairly answering the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else for comment? Mr. Penter.
Thank you, Chair. I think just finally, one of the questions that I was asked to respond to was, I think, on something that you yourself raised, was on the issue of the difference in standards and the different levels. I mentioned earlier that we have some half of our standards aligned internationally, but there is a balance that we do set national standards for national needs. So we do have differences, and we take careful note of where we need to differ with international standards for various reasons. There may well be geographic reasons, or there may well be different reasons why we differ in South Africa or to the rest of the world. And we take those. We have standards are not drafted only by the people at the SADS. They develop through a process of consulting the various stakeholders, and the standards and the levels that they set are set by the stakeholders that are necessary to the South African market. And maybe just to extend some of the intervention, the reason why we have advisory boards is to perhaps tell us not so much that the process of developing standards is not fully inclusive, but sometimes we need to get advice from the board and from the advisory board as to do we have the right technical committee in place, or the new areas of activity that we need to be looking at that are important for the South African market. And I think the role of the advisory forum is to set up our future strategic direction to tell us if we're doing the right thing. So in summary, I think there is a place to be different. You've got to take that into account very, very carefully, because we are trading in the global environment. That at the end of the day, even if it is an aligned standard, it's got to be relevant to the South African market. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mutemba.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry for being so talkative this morning. But I need some clearance on this. Maybe the starting thing, if I clear up on this. Is there this issue that if the meat has been in the coolers for so long and becomes not the red color going off a little bit, that they inject it with something, this time maybe it's not water, that could be the pinkish color back. Is the department anything about that? And if that is happening, does it relate to the sandwich? Because I don't think this relates to it now. Thank you very much.
Just in terms of local products, especially in meat products, I think there are meat products much more hard to
there's a big problem with the breakdown in the cold chain in local products, meat products. Because of the power outages and load shedding, there's a break in the cold chain, and the quality of the meat obviously goes much lower. What you find is that the producer, the consumer, is finding that they're buying meat that goes off after one day of purchasing, for instance, or meat that is not up to the standard and expired much earlier than it is there because of the breaking the cold chain. Is there some way that can be addressed? Because it's going to be an ongoing problem, you know, and it's an issue that people are raising on a day-to-day basis. What kind of mechanisms are we putting in place to address things like that?
Thank you, Chair. The question Barbara asked now, I think as a regulator we don't deal with those issues. They fall under another regulator. But safe to say, there are standards, you know, that are talking about these issues. And if a standard says they should not be injected with that, then it will be criminal, you know, to be injecting these issues, you know, the need between the color and what and the relevant regulator must then deal with that. And on the other issue, you know, relating to the outrages and whatever, you know, and I think that is a bigger issue that you can deal with here. And one would not have an answer, but I am aware that the Department of Trade and Industry are putting together a consumer protection law that will then deal with these other issues. You know, one of the provisions there are issues relating to damages. You know, if you paid for electricity, then as a result of that, you suffer damages. And you know, what are kind of redress mechanisms do you have? And I think yesterday in the newspaper there was something relating to a workshop or conference that took place last week, you know, relating to that legislation. It is my understanding that perhaps sometimes this year that legislation may come into a year. And maybe that those questions will then be most relevant then. But at the moment, it is very difficult, you know, to deal with some of these issues. I must say, compulsory specifications come in where there is a compulsory law, and then you have not, which has been declared. That's why compulsory is not any technical regulation, but the compulsory specification is that which has been declared by the Minister of Trade and Industry. To say, from now on, you must meet the following specifications. Meat is not part of that, except if it is canned meat, or it is fish, you know, fishery product. It's a fishery product to talk freely about that. But then any other issue relating to a declared, you know, the regulation will then fall under the Department of Health, not of Department of Agriculture. Yeah, I wanted to say once that is compulsory and then we have not complied with that, then there are various measures that we do. We check importers that are coming into the country to make sure that products that they are bringing into the country do comply with a compulsory certification. We also visit manufacturers within the country on a regular basis to make sure that they do comply. We also go to the retail outlets as well, just to take samples on the retail outlets and send them for testing, you know, on regular levels to make sure that they're compliant. If there is no compliance to those, then we do take appropriate measures. The products that we regulate, carbon products, as electrical products, and I think some of the cables that you see there must be 100% copper, because if it is not 100% copper, it may bend, you know, it may end up, you know, with the whole building bending and whatever. So there are some issues related to that. And then there was an example of a compulsory certification that you are considering, which is relating also to, you know, the light and the kind of power that you may use and all those issues, you know. Because they also have an impact on environment, you know, the life of that and all that. So you will have so electrical appliances and some of the products fall under that. We have also on automotive. Now some people will ask a question, why a person has bought this car and within a second day the door is falling when the SABS has approved that vehicle? I must indicate we don't deal with the quality. So the door may fall, but the brakes must make sure that if you apply the brakes, they are safe. Issues around the lights, you know, issues around the windscreen, and some few issues around the safety belts, and some few issues as well.
to make sure that the consumer is safe in there. We have a rating to the material and mechanical, for instance, the dust mask that you use to protect you from dust. You know, how should they be, and then if you don't use those, you may end up being in problem. And for instance, plastic bags as well. How plastic bags should be, you know, and so we have standards around that. We also have standards that have already indicated around food and fishery products. So our scope at the state is a limited scope in terms of those issues. But there are other regulators who can use standards, or who may use standards as and when they need. And then once they've used that, and then those products will then fall under those regulations. And the Department of Agriculture may then, I think, would be best suited to deal with meat and all the issues. That's it.
Thank you very much. I understand you want to say something, Member?
Yes, want to know where the problem is. I know it's a coincidence, but I want to know where the problem is. I think we have to, in our consultation process, we have to this consultation where this process, including this process of CCRC. And so in that regard, the consultation includes that consultation. In terms of implementation, there is the issue of that we have, for example, offices for the regulator in different provinces. So they're working there at the provincial level, even the standards bodies, the standards division for certain offices. So there is also an opportunity and a vehicle for close working relationships at the
May I add, it's not only offices, but where we don't have offices, because in some provinces it doesn't make sense for us to have offices, because it will be costly to employ people on a full-time basis if there are two factories on plastic bags. You know, why would you want to have then a staff complement of five people that will only be the staff factory for 5 days a month? You know, so we then decide that no, we will have those staff members in Pretoria, but they will, during certain times, visit those provinces to carry their inspection. We work with consumer affairs and non-government organizations as well, where we run consumer education on those areas that are then covered. And in fact, within the SABS now, we have what we call a sector board on consumer protection, where consumer organizations come and sit and then they give input. But in all 9 provinces, we do communicate. In fact, we are a member of a forum of the government consumer affairs agency, where on a quarterly basis, we meet to give reports on the various activities that we are doing. Our presence also in terms of radios, I think you must have heard us now, that we are, you know, in terms of radio programs, where we are invited to give input and in order to reach members of the public.
Thank you very much. I hope I was representing members if I say we indeed had a very interesting briefing out of which we will come more educated than we were. Not in degree terms, but in information. Can I take this opportunity to request the Honorable Assembly to extend a vote of thanks to everybody here?
I'll stand up on your
chairperson.
Michelle
Wiley,
Chairperson of the Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I thank the department for their great input, and even when they ask questions out of the border, they still come in and answer to us and you know, reject our right out here and give us also direction on where to go and get those answers. And we really appreciate the department all with coming in. I see there's no slight fight or friction between this committee and the department anymore.
meeting is adjourned.